Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, 40. Strike of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by James Lewis, Christopher Sheeran, James Keegan, Jonathan Watkins, Tim Getman, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Drew Copus, Tim Carlin, Christopher Graybill, Mort Shelby, Stephen Carpenter, Michael Glenn, Bradley Smith, David Coyne, Alexander Strain, Thomas Keegan, Eric Mesner, Tim Pabone, Michael John Casey, Colleen Delaney, Elizabeth Jernigan, David Harris, Danny Gavigan, Joe Brack, Thomas Penny, Nick DePinto, Ken Jackson, Evan Casey, Dylan Lynch, Lily Beacon, Scott McCormick, Nanette Savard, and Casey Platt. Deacus Templeton had once ridden with Frank and Jesse James. It was not particularly a matter of pride for him, especially since the James brothers were well-known figures, even idolized in some places, while very few had ever heard of Deacus Templeton. What bothered Templeton the most was that he was the one who had planned the train robbery in Muncie, Kansas, where they got $30,000. That was the biggest haul from any train robbery the James gang made, and it was Frank and Jesse who were celebrated, not the one who planned it. Shortly after that, Templeton decided to go into business for himself. He had learned that the Red Cliff Special would be carrying a money transfer of $50,000 from a bank in Pueblo, Colorado, to the bank in Big Rock, Colorado, which was more than any job the James brothers had ever pulled. To stop the train, he had piled wood and brush onto the track.
The train's coming, Deacus!
All right, Dooley.
Torch the pile, then.
Smoke Jensen had gone to Denver with Pearlie and Cal to set up a plant that would ship beef, already butchered and processed, in refrigerated cars to markets in the East. Handling already processed meat was much cheaper than shipping live cattle, and the result was a greater profit to the rancher. Smoke built the plant not only for himself, but also for the other cattlemen in Colorado, as well as in Wyoming. He left Pearlie and Cal in Denver to see to the final details and was on the way back home, changing trains in Pueblo so he could take the Red Cliff Special on its overnight run. He'd be arriving in Big Rock at 6 o'clock in the morning. Smoke didn't know what was going on, but he knew it certainly wasn't a normal stop. He looked through the window to see where they were, but the lanterns that lit the inside of the car cast reflections on the windows, making it difficult to see through them and into the dark outside. Though he couldn't see a thing through the windows, Smoke had a gut feeling the train was being robbed. He pulled his pistol and held it down in his lap.
Everyone stay in their seats!
The man was wearing a hood over his face, and he held a pistol pointed toward the passengers in the car.
Now, folks, this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna walk down the aisle and hold my hat out. You know, sort of like what they do in church. But I don't just want a coin or two like you do for the Lord. I want everything you have. And if I see any of you holding out on me, well, I'll have to shoot you.
The gunman started down the aisle making his collection. He got to a young woman holding a baby.
Please. This is all the money I have. I'm taking it to my husband so we can buy a house.
I said don't nobody hold back. Now you just empty that bag of yours into my hat.
Leave the lady alone.
Mister, this here is a train robbery. Maybe you don't understand how train robberies work. You see, I take the money, and people like you give the money, so you might as well get your money out. Because soon as I get the money from little mama here, well, I'll be taking yours.
If you want to live, put the hat down now so the people can get their money back and then leave this car.
If I want to live? Mister, I'm the one holding the gun here. Or ain't you noticed?
Leave this car now or die.
I've had about enough of you, mister.
I feel the same way.
God! What the hell?
One of the other train robbers jumped onto the train, but Smoke was ready for it.
What's going on in there?
One of the men ran up and looked into the car and then jerked his head back.
Clay and Dooley are both shot dead. I'm getting out of here.
You can't leave, McClane. We ain't got the money yet.
Get it, you shell. There's only two of us left.
McClane started to ride away. Templeton raised his pistol.
And now there's only one of us.
Yeah!
When the train reached Big Rock the next morning, the bodies of the three would-be train robbers were laid out on the depot platform. Each one had his arms folded across his chest. The hoods had been removed, and all three had their eyes open. A crowd had gathered, looking down at the bodies. Sheriff Monty Carson was there as well.
You say you only got two of them?
Yeah, these two.
That's Clay Brandon and Dooley Waters. The other one is Len McClane. If you didn't shoot him, who did?
There were four of them. It was the fourth one who shot this man.
I don't suppose you heard his name called out.
No, I didn't.
Well, the bank will certainly be thanking you. There's a $50,000 shipment on that train.
That's funny. If there was that much money in the shipment, why were they bothering with trying to steal the few dollars they could get from the passengers?
One of the men in the crowd of onlookers was Deacus Templeton. He'd already learned that Smoke Jensen was the man who had foiled his robbery attempt. He stood behind the others, watching Jensen and the sheriff as they were engaged in conversation. He had heard of Smoke Jensen, who in that part of the country hadn't heard of him. But it was the first time he'd ever seen him, and he wanted to get a good look at the man. He didn't want to ever blunder into some foolish mistake, as had Clay and Dooley. Templeton smiled then as he realized he had an advantage. He knew what Smoke Jensen looked like, but Jensen did not know what he looked like. Dijon, France. Pierre Mouchette was a French army officer and an 1869 graduate from Saint-Cyr, the leading military academy in France. After Saint-Cyr, he'd entered Saumur, France's premier cavalry school, and after leaving Saumur, he'd taken part in the Franco-Prussian War. It was there that he encountered the American general, Phil Sheridan, who was in France to observe the war. Sheridan had told him of the American West, and though it had no immediate bearing on Mouchette's military career, he remembered it later when after his third duel, he was told he had gone as high as he was going to get in the French military. In January of 1879, orders were cut appointing Captain Pierre Mouchette as disbursement officer. These orders called for him to transfer 2.5 million francs from Paris to the Army Finance Office in Dijon. Mouchette made very careful plans, selecting as his assistant a sergeant who was approximately his same build. They picked up the money in Paris, then went by train to Dijon. In Dijon, they mounted horses and started toward the division headquarters. When they were but a mile out of town, Mouchette turned off the road.
Capitaine Mouchette, where are you going? The headquarters is this way.
This is a shorter way.
Shorter? How can it be shorter? This road goes straight to the headquarters.
Would you argue with an officer, sergeant?
None, mon capitaine.
Then this is the direction we will go.
Oui, mon capitaine.
The sergeant followed Mouchette dutifully until they were deep in a wooded area.
Capitaine Marchet, forgive me, but we are now some distance from the headquarters. I think we should go back.
Do you?
It was then Sergeant Dubois saw Mouchette holding a pistol leveled toward him.
Capitaine, what are you doing?
Working quickly, Mouchette removed his uniform and put on the civilian clothes he had previously packed in his saddlebags. Then, stripping Dubois of his uniform, he replaced it with his own.
There now, Sergeant. You have just been promoted. I salute you, Captain Mouchette.
It was not by chance Mouchette had chosen that particular spot, for earlier he had hidden a can of kerosene in the bushes. He poured kerosene on Dubois' face and set a match to it. After that, he put his billfold in the pocket of the uniform Sergeant Dubois was now wearing. In it were Mouchette's identity papers, the orders appointing him as disbursement officer, his membership card to the officer's mess, and a letter he had recently received from a military clothier in Paris, quoting the price of a new dress uniform. With his deception completed, Mouchette crossed the border into Switzerland and journeyed to Geneva. There, he presented himself to the bank as a French businessman.
I shall be going to North America shortly to invest in a business opportunity in New York, and I should like to change some French currency into American dollars. What is the current exchange rate?
It is 5 francs for $1. How much do you wish to exchange?
2.5 million francs.
The teller made no reaction to the large sum. He picked up a pencil and began figuring the amount.
Your amount comes to $487,000. That sum is, of course, less the $12,500 conversion fee.
Very good.
The teller counted out the American dollars and handed them to Mouchette.
Merci.
Do you care to recount it, monsieur?
No, I'm sure it is all there.
Then if you would sign this certificate, please.
Mouchette signed it as Antoine Dubois. It was as Pierre Mouchette that he devised the plan to steal the payroll. It was as Antoine Dubois that he exchanged the francs for U.S. dollars. And it was as Colonel the Marquis Lucien Garneau that he boarded a ship in Hamburg, Germany, bound for New York. Lucien Garneau was how he'd be known. Garneau got off the ship in New York City and immediately bought a local newspaper. He saw an article that caught his interest.
Intelligence from overseas. Killer of Captain Mouchette still at large. Sergeant Dubois suspected of heinous crime. Captain Pierre Mouchette was appointed military finance officer with the responsibility of transporting a large sum of money from Paris to Dijon, but was foully murdered by one he trusted most. When Captain Mouchette did not show up at the appointed time, a search was launched, resulting in the gruesome discovery of the charred remains of the gallant captain and the discovery that both the money and the sergeant were missing. It is believed that the cowardly Sergeant Dubois, animated by greed and a lack of personal morals, betrayed the trust so necessary in the military between the officers and the ranks, and when least expected, killed Captain Mouchette. The foul deed done, the disgraceful sergeant tried to cover his action by burning the captain's body. The attempt was unsuccessful, as he was identified by his uniform and personal papers. The despicable Sergeant Dubois remains missing.
Garneau smiled as he realized everything had worked out exactly as he had intended. He went directly from Castle Garden, his point of entry, to Grand Central Depot to continue his plan. He recalled a conversation he'd had with General Sheridan when the American general had talked about Colorado. He told him how beautiful the mountains were. But what had most interested Garneau about Colorado was Sheridan's one offhand comment.
Oh, a person could go into the Rocky Mountains of Colorado and if he wanted to, just drop off the face of the earth.
Finding a map of Colorado, Lucien Garneau put his finger on the chart with no particular destination in mind. The closest town to the tip of his finger was a town called Big Rock in Eagle County, so he bought a ticket for that destination. Dijon, France. Inspector André Laurent of the French military police was shown into General Moreau's office.
Colonel Durand said you had information for me.
I do, my general. The body we found was not that of Capitaine Mouchette.
What? But the body was wearing Mouchette's uniform. His billfold was found with the body.
Those were plants to make us believe it was Mouchette's body.
Who would do that?
I believe Mouchette himself did it. The body was that of Sergeant Antoine Dubois.
Dubois?
I believe Mouchette murdered Dubois, stole the money, then made it appear as if Dubois was the guilty party. He burned Dubois' face so he could not be identified.
Then how was he identified?
The body was missing two toes on its left foot. It is well known by Sergeant Dubois' friends that he lost two toes in the war. Mouchette has no such wound.
Then Mouchette is guilty of murder and theft of the money.
Oui, my general.
Inspector Laurent, you have full authorization to go after Mouchette. Find him, wherever he is, and bring him to justice for France.
That will be my pleasure, General.
After what seemed an interminable length of travel, he'd had no idea America was so large, Garneau reached Denver. From there, he took a train to Pueblo, and from Pueblo, he began the final leg of a journey that had started in Dijon almost a month earlier. 6½ days after he left New York, Garneau arrived in Big Rock at 6:00 in the morning. He was tired from the overnight trip, for there had been no sleeping arrangements on the train. Although the Big Rock Hotel was but one block away, Garneau arranged for he and his luggage to be transported there. He was very tired and wanted nothing more than to go to bed, but he knew there was something he had to do first. Before he could rest, he had to go to the bank.
Yes, sir, may I help you?
Oui. I am just moving here and would like to open an account, s'il vous plaît.
I can do that for you, sir. How much would you like to deposit in the account?
$475,000.
What? How much did you say?
$475,000.
Garneau sat the suitcase on the desk and opened it, then began removing the packets of money.
Oh, no, sir, not here. Come into the back with me to speak with the president of the bank. I don't think it's good to show so much money in public.
The teller hustled Garneau to the back office of Mr. Joel Montgomery. Soon, Montgomery was staring at a pile of money on his desk.
We can handle your deposit, Mr. Garneau.
Colonel Garneau.
Yes, sir. Well, here's the thing, Colonel Garneau. We can handle your deposit. There's no way we're going to keep all that money here. We're going to have to lay off 90% of it to the other banks.
Why?
Well, the risks. We're capitalized at $50,000, and it'd be much too risky to keep this much money in one bank. So, over the next few days, we'll be making deposits in other banks. That it won't all be kept in this bank will not affect you. You'll still have a demand account and can draw against it at any time.
Merci.
Half an hour later, he would leave the bank with $100 in small denominations in his pocket, along with a deposit slip for $475,000 he had left at the bank. He would return to his room at the hotel and sleep through the rest of the day. Waking up that evening, Garneau decided to walk through the town to get a look at the rather quaint place that was to be his new home. He took his dinner at Delmonico's, then went next door to Longmont's, which he perceived to be a drinking establishment.
What do you have?
I don't suppose you would have any cognac, would you?
The man standing at the far end of the bar overheard Garneau's accent as well as his order. He smiled and came toward him.
Bonsoir, monsieur. Et par votre accent, je suppose que vous êtes un homme de bon goût. Vous demandez pour le cognac? Je vais essayer au mousson.
How delightful. You speak French, though with an accent I can't place. As I am in America now, I wish only to speak English. And je vais essayer au mousson. is a most delightful cognac.
Very well. We will speak English. My name is Louis Longmont, and I own this establishment. The first cognac is on the house.
Merci, Monsieur Longmont. And my name, sir, is Colonel the Marquis Lucien Garneau.
What brings you to Colorado, Colonel Garneau?
The bartender served the cognac, and Garneau swirled it about, used his hand to waft the fragrance into his face, and smiled.
Marvelous. I have come to this place to buy land and raise cattle.
Well, there is land for sale, and this is good cattle country. In fact, we have one of the largest and most successful ranches in the nation right here. It's called Sugarloaf, and is owned by Smoke Jensen. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Smoke? Like we say, fumé?
Fumé, yes. Smoke is not his real name. His real name is Kirby, but everyone calls him Smoke.
What an odd name.
How long have you been in America?
I've been in this country for a fortnight only.
Well, that explains it. Anyone who's been here for 6 months or longer has heard of Smoke Jensen. We don't have marquis and lords and such, but if we did, Smoke Jensen would have a title for sure.
He sounds quite successful. I should like to meet him.
Well, speak of the devil. Smoke, over here.
It looks like business is good tonight.
Oh, business is good every night. As you would know, if Sally didn't keep you on such a tight leash, how is it she let you come to town tonight?
She's on the school board, remember? There's a meeting down at the school tonight.
Yeah, I thought it must be something like that. Smoke, this is the Colonel, the Marquis Lucien Garneau. Colonel Garneau, this is the man I was telling you about, Smoke Jensen.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Garneau.
That would be Colonel Garneau.
I beg your pardon, Colonel.
I understand you are the largest and most successful rancher in the county.
I've been fortunate.
Well, Monsieur Jensen, I give you fair warning. My personal motto is secundus nulli. That is Latin for...
second to none.
Yes. And I am not used to being second to anyone. I will soon have a ranch that is larger. You find that humorous, monsieur?
Not humorous so much as impossible.
Why is it impossible?
Because there isn't enough available land left in Eagle and Pitkin counties combined to build a ranch larger than Sugarloaf.
I will find the land. Thank you for the cognac.
Garneau took a coin from his pocket and slapped it onto the bar. Then, turning, he walked away and left the saloon.
Now that's one odd duck.
He's a marquis. I think that to be a marquis, you have to be an odd duck.
When Garneau awakened the next morning, he donned the uniform of a colonel in the French cavalry. Although he'd never advanced above the rank of captain, he felt that passing himself off as a colonel would be far more impressive. He went to the land office and was brought into Pete Perkins' office. Perkins was the person in charge of the land office. He was a small man with a red face and an oversized nose.
I understand that you want to buy land.
Oui.
How much land are you interested in buying?
How much does the land cost?
It's about $5 per acre.
How much land does Monsieur Jensen have?
Oh, heavens, I don't know. I'd guess he has around 30,000 acres or so.
Then I shall want 30,000 acres as well.
There aren't that many acres of unowned land available in the whole valley.
How large is Eagle County?
Just over 1 million acres.
You say that there are 1 million acres in the county, but I can't buy 30,000 acres?
Oh, there might be that many acres, perhaps even more, but it wouldn't be contiguous. There are too many ranches and farms of 1 to 3 sections of land.
Suppose enough farmers and ranchers contiguous to land that I buy could be persuaded to sell their land. Would it be possible to put together a ranch of the size I am seeking?
Well, yeah, if you could convince enough of the smaller owners to sell it. But I'm not sure you can do that. The small ranchers and farmers are doing remarkably well. I don't see any of them selling out, let alone enough for you to do what you want to do.
Please buy as much land for me as you can, and let me worry about the adjacent landowners.
Perkins did some math on a sheet of paper.
Colonel Garno, this is going to require quite a sizable outlay. With just the land I know is available, we're talking about at least $87,000.
If you wish, you may go with me to the bank and inquire as to available funds.
Well, the bank is just around the corner.
A few minutes later, Garno and Perkins were standing in Joel Montgomery's office.
Colonel Garno, what can I do for you?
You can inform Monsieur Perkins that I have sufficient funds to buy land.
Mr. Perkins, it would not be ethical for me to disclose just how much money Colonel Garno has on deposit with us. Suffice it to say that he is good for any amount of land you can find for him to purchase.
Colonel Garno, I can see that you and I are going to have quite a profitable relationship.
Dad. Early on the morning of August 25th, George Munger, owner of the successful ranch, Long Trek. Death is a solemn event, but one which all must meet sooner or later. Sometimes the pain and sadness occasioned by its touching the hearts of the bereaved is of more than an ordinary character. It is so in this case. George Munger's 6,000-acre ranch, Long Trek, is the envy of all in Eagle County who have taken up that profession. Munger arrived in Colorado 9 years previous, and in that time not only began a successful ranch, but fathered two children, a boy, Seth, and a daughter, Meg. His widow, Anne, was the apple of his eye. He had spoken to others of his hope to raise Seth to be of great help on the ranch and to prepare him for eventual ownership, but that is not to be. Barely 2 weeks have gone by since George Munger took ill. And though he initially passed it off as something of no consequence, the illness quickly took control and he died. His last wish was that his widow sell the ranch and move back to Ohio where she has family, believing that a woman alone and raising two children would have a better life there than she would find here. Mrs. Munger acquiesced to her husband's last wishes by placing the ranch on the market. As it was adjacent to land recently bought by Colonel de Marquis Lucien Garneau, the Frenchman made her a generous offer, and she accepted. Out of respect for its previous owner, Colonel Garneau will keep the name Long Trek, and states that whatever property he may henceforth acquire will be assimilated into and retain the name Long Trek. Mrs. Munger can take comfort in the knowledge that while the body may be committed to the tomb, there is a bond that reaches beyond the grave, and it will ever hold her in affectionate embrace.
Lucien Garneau bought Long Trek, complete with house and outbuildings. Over the ensuing 4 months, he bought several more acres contiguous to Long Trek. So by spring, he had 15,000 acres, making Long Trek the second largest ranch in the valley. Every ranch he had bought had been one the owners were willing to sell. But his 15,000 acres were locked in by at least 8 other ranchers, all who had property that abutted his and none who wanted to sell.
I don't believe you're going to get anyone else to sell out to you, Colonel.
Otis Nance had been foreman a Long Trek when it was owned by Munger, and he had stayed with the ranch when Garneau bought it.
They will sell. I will have the biggest and the best ranch in the entire valley.
Well, I tell you, Colonel, you might talk enough of them into selling out to you to wind up being the biggest ranch in the area, though that ain't likely. And it's even less likely that you'll be the best.
And why not, if I may ask?
First of all, because you can't grow no more unless you get some of the folks around you to sell their land to you, which I can tell you right now, there ain't no more of them going to do it. And then even if you can wind up with more land, well, sir, I just worked some over at Sugarloaf. It's about the best run place I ever seen. It ain't just Smoke Jensen. It's his wife and the men that work there. Jensen, why, he don't let his people go in the wintertime like most other ranchers. So the ones that's working there, they stays real loyal to him.
Then perhaps you should go back to work for him.
Oh, now there ain't no need you go getting all riled up now. I was just telling you the truth because I thought you might want to know.
Leave my ranch now, Monsieur Nance.
Wait a minute. You firing me?
I am.
Well, then in that case, you owe me a half month's wages.
2 days later, Nance was in the Four Flusher Saloon in Wheeler, Colorado, drinking beer and still complaining about being fired.
I got fired for telling the truth. A fella ought not to ever get fired for doing nothing more than telling the truth. The problem is, the colonel has more money than he got sense. He's trying to buy up the whole county, only there ain't no more people going to sell to him.
The bar girl Nance was talking to was paying attention to him only as long as she could entice him into buying more drinks. A solitary drinker at the next table over was listening, and he turned to Nance.
Who's this man you're talking about?
He's a Frenchman by the name of Garneau. Lucien Garneau. Calls himself a Marquis. And he likes for folks to call him Colonel. I think a Marquis supposed to be like a lord or something.
And he's a rich man, this Garneau?
Oh, yeah, he's rich all right.
Deacus Templeton smiled. It was good information to know.
Thing is, he's wanting to make his ranch the biggest and the best in the valley, but I told him he ain't ever gonna get better than Smoke Jensen.
Who?
Smoke Jensen. You heard of him, ain't you? Oh, hell, I thought everyone heard of Smoke Jensen.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of him.
Well, just Smoke Jensen is the one who owns the Sugar Loaf. Well, I told Garneau there weren't no way he was going to ever make his ranch bigger. Hell, he can't, because he can't grow no more. Puddle and all them other little farmers and ranchers got their land right up next to his. And if they don't sell them, then there ain't nowhere else he can go.
Has he tried to buy them out?
Oh, yeah, he tried a bunch of times. Well, he got Turner and Daniels to sell out to him, but there ain't no one else gonna do it.
Templeton passed through the gate that arched over the road leading up to the main house. The name of the ranch, Long Trek, was burned into the wood, and to either side of the name was a fleur-de-lis. Templeton had no idea what it was or what it meant. As he rode past the bunkhouse, he saw three men out front, sitting in chairs that were tipped back against the front wall. None of the three made any effort to greet him. Tying his horse off at the hitching rail in front of the main house, he stepped up onto the porch. Templeton was greeted by a short, red-faced man wearing a jacket and tie.
Mr. Garneau?
I am Garrison Reeves, sir. I am Colonel the Marquis Garneau's valet.
Is what?
Do you wish to speak with Colonel Garneau?
Yes.
Your name, sir?
Templeton. Deacus Templeton.
You may wait in the parlor.
All right.
Templeton was shown into the parlor. As he waited, he saw, in a felt-lined case, two pistols, though they were unlike any pistol he was familiar with. He picked up one of them for a closer examination. It didn't have a cylinder, and when he pushed the button on the side, the barrel dropped down. It was a single-shot breech-loading pistol.
That is a perfectly matched pair of dueling pistols by Gastine Renette, and they are very valuable.
Turning, Templeton saw a tall, dark-haired man with eyes so light blue they were almost colorless.
Who would duel with something like this? Hell, the barrel is so long you'd have a hard time getting it out of your holster.
When a gentleman duels, the pistol is already in his hand. There is no need to withdraw it from a holster.
The hell you say? I've never heard of a gunfight like that.
It isn't a gunfight, monsieur. It is an affaire d'honneur. Mr. Reeves told me you wish to speak to me.
You're Mr. Garneau?
I am Colonel Garneau.
Yes, sir. Well, Colonel, I'd like to come to work for you.
I have too many employees now. I have no need for more cowboys.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, Colonel. I'm not exactly what you would call a cowboy.
Then if you aren't a cowboy, why do you ask for employment? What are you, a cook?
No, I'm not a cook either. I'm what you might call someone who makes things happen.
I don't understand. What does that mean, you are someone who makes things happen?
I've heard you want your ranch to grow larger, but you're blocked in by some small ranchers who won't sell out to you.
They are cretins.
Well, Mr. Garneau, I believe I can convince those folks to sell to you. And not only that, I can get them to sell to you at a price that's less than what their land is worth.
That is most interesting. You can convince all eight to sell?
We won't have to convince all eight of them. All we have to do is convince two or three to sell, and the others will fall into place. I can do that.
And how exactly are you going to do that?
By hunting down cattle thieves.
I don't understand. How does hunting down cattle thieves have anything to do with my intention to grow my ranch?
Well, if cattle are disappearing from your ranch, don't you have a right to go after the people who are stealing them?
I suppose so.
It's been my experience these small ranchers can only survive by stealing cattle from the larger ranchers.
And you think the smaller ranchers are stealing cattle from me?
We can make sure they are.
I see. And you can take care of that problem for me?
Well, that depends on how particular you are about how I go about it.
How particular I am? I don't understand, Monsieur Templeton.
I mean, what if something was to happen to one of the people who've been stealing your cattle? Something bad enough to make him want to sell?
Am I to assume you can make that happen?
I can and I will, if that's what it takes to get someone to listen to reason.
I see.
How would you feel about that, Colonel Garneau?
I am more interested in results, Templeton, than I am in how those results are obtained.
Then I'm your man.
What sort of compensation will you require?
$10,000, plus expenses.
$10,000? Ha! You think most highly of yourself, monsieur.
Plus expenses.
And just what would these expenses be?
I'd say about $2,000. I'd need that money up front. You don't have to pay the $10,000 until you've got all the land you need.
Very well, Monsieur Templeton. Return tomorrow, and I will have the expense money for you. How soon will you get started on your project?
First things first, Colonel. I have to take care of someone who might be a problem.
Who would that be?
Now, Colonel, you really don't want to know that. The less you know about what I'm doing, the better off you'll be. This way, none of it'll come back on you.
Yes. Yes. I believe you may be correct.
I'll be here tomorrow for the expense money.
Red Cliff, Colorado. The signs read, a meeting of the Eagle County Cattlemen's Association. Monday next, County Courthouse. They had been posted in all the towns of Eagle County. Mount Jackson, Dillon, Frisco, Wheeler, Eagle Park, Mitchell Wells, Swan, Preston, and Big Rock. So it was well attended by the larger landholders of the county. Smoke got a cup of coffee from the table in the back of the room, then took his seat as Wes Gregory, president of the Cattlemen's Association, started the meeting.
Gentlemen, the purpose of this special called meeting is twofold. First, it is to introduce you to our newest member, Colonel the Marquis Lucien Garneau. Colonel Garneau, as some of you may know, bought Long Track from George Munger's widow and has subsequently added to it, so it is accurate to say he is now one of the larger landholders in our county. The second reason I have called this meeting is because Colonel Garneau has encountered a problem all of us have faced from time to time, and if what is happening at Long Track is any indication, we all may be facing it again soon.
What problem would that be, Joe?
The speaker was a ranch owner by the name of Adam Dickerson.
Cattle rustling.
Cattle rustling? Hell, I ain't had no problem with that, other than some transient killing a steer now and then for meat.
Perhaps I had better let Colonel Garneau talk.
Huh? Merci, Monsieur Gregory. And I promise you, saying thank you to Mr. Gregory will be the last French I use. I will speak only in English, because I want to make certain everyone understands the severity of the problem. I have been here but a short time. I bought the ranch from the widow of George Munger, along with all the livestock. I have added to the size of the original ranch by purchasing property adjacent to the ranch. I can expand no farther, because the holdings of small ranchers and farmers have me blocked. That would not be a problem, except for this. I am losing cattle at an alarming rate. And I am convinced the culprits are those same small ranchers and farmers who have me locked in.
Garneau, I think you may be mistaken there. I know all the ranchers and farmers you're talking about. They've been my neighbors for some time. Speer, Woodward, Turner, Babcock, Logan, Clayton, Daniels, Kiefer, Drexler, Buttram, and Puddle. Why, you couldn't ask for a finer neighbor than Humboldt Puddle. Anytime anyone runs into trouble, Mr. Puddle's the first one to offer help.
Perhaps, Monsieur Jensen, it is because you are a long-time, established resident that they leave you alone. Perhaps it is only because I am new here and I am a foreigner that I've been singled out.
Have you gone to the sheriff about it?
The sheriff is as Monsieur Jensen, I'm afraid. He thinks his neighbors can do no wrong, but I don't need the sheriff. I'm in the process of putting together my own regulators.
Regulators? Regulators? You mean vigilantes?
Yes, to guard my cattle and to stop the thievery.
Well, look here, Garneau, are you expecting us to join you in hiring a bunch of vigilantes?
No, that isn't at all necessary. I just want to make you aware of the problem and how I plan to solve it.
When Smoke stepped into Longmont Saloon 3 days later, he saw Tim Murchison, the owner of the leather goods store, and Dan Norton, the lawyer, sitting at a table with Lewis Longmont. He walked over to join them.
What are you doing here at this hour? Another school board meeting?
Do you think the only time I can come in at night is when Sally is at a school board meeting?
Yes.
Well, you're wrong. I also come in when she's at a garden club meeting, like tonight.
Smoke, there's not a gunman in the country that you won't face down, but I think Sally's got your number.
Oh, listen, Tim. Have you ever seen Sally with a gun? She's as good as anyone I know.
I believe you there, my friend. I've seen her give shooting exhibitions.
How'd the Cattlemen's Association meeting go up in Red Cliff the other day?
Seems our newest rancher is being plagued with cattle rustling.
Cattle rustling? That's strange. I haven't heard anyone else talking about cattle rustling. Have you had any trouble with it?
No, I haven't.
Lewis was staring at the entrance.
There are three men I haven't seen before.
Smoke looked toward the front of the saloon.
Probably more cowboys coming to work for Garneau. He's bringing them in from everywhere.
Those men are cowboys.
What do you mean?
Look at their hands. Most working cowboys have hands that are calloused or crooked fingers from being broken. Those men have smooth hands. They've never done any real work.
Yeah, and look how they're wearing their guns.
In cut-down holsters, their guns hung rather low from the hip. They carried themselves with the swagger of someone who not only knew how to use a gun, but had used it.
Barkeep! Three beers! Which way to Long Trick Ranch?
I'll be right with you, sir.
No, by God, you'll be with us now.
Sir, I am with a customer.
Well, what the hell you think we are?
I'm sorry, sir. Please be a little patient. I'll be with you shortly.
By damn, I said you'll be with us now.
Mister?
You talking to me?
I am, sir. Long Trek is 5 miles west of town. I suggest you go there now. If you want a drink, you might be happier with a service at the Brown Dirt Cowboy. That's another saloon one block east of here, on the corner of Front Street and Sykes.
Yeah? Why should we go to another saloon when we're already in a saloon? Barkeep, you come down here, or do I have to do something to get your attention?
Perhaps that was too subtle for you.
Too... what?
I'll say it in words even someone like you can understand. Get out of my establishment.
Your establishment? You mean you own this place?
I do.
You ain't all that careful about how you treat your customers, are you?
Oh, the customers I value, I treat very well. The others I ask to leave. As I'm asking you.
The two men with the belligerent one stepped out beside him. All three faced Lewis. They were standing, and Lewis was sitting, which put him at a significant disadvantage if the situation developed any further.
Suppose we don't want to leave. What are you going to do about it?
I'll force you to leave.
Is that so? Now how are you going to do that? You seem to have gotten yourself into a little pickle here. I mean, you're sitting down, and we're standing.
I believe you wanted my attention, sir.
Not now. I may have some business with this man.
The belligerent man heard the sound and then turned toward the bartender. He was holding a sawed-off double-barreled 12-gauge shotgun about 12 inches from the belligerent one's head.
And I've got business with you. I believe I could get all three of you with one shot.
No, wait! Look here now. There ain't no need in this going on any further. It was just a little misunderstanding is all. If the man don't want our business, we'll take it down to that other saloon he was talking about.
There would be the Brown Dirt. And as Mr. Longmont explained, it's one block east, then south on Sykes Street. You can't miss it. It's rather loud and unruly. Just your kind of place.
All right. We'll go.
Thank you. I would appreciate that. Oh, and if you three would like to come back in here again sometime and act like gentlemen, I would welcome your business.
Mister, we ain't never coming back here. Come on, let's go.
If those three men aren't cowboys, why do they want to find Long Trick?
Over the last several days, I've noticed quite a few men like that have gone to work for Garneau.
What on earth for?
Garneau is recruiting a private army to, as he explains it, control the cattle rustling.
That's a dumb damn thing for him to be doing.
Lewis looked toward the bar and waved the barkeep over.
Yes, Mr. Longmont.
Mr. McVeigh, I want to introduce you to some friends of mine. Smoke, Dan, Tim. This is my new bartender, Johnny McVeigh.
What happened to Poke?
He still works here. He won't come in until 8 o'clock tonight. He and Johnny are splitting the time.
Well, Mr. McVeigh, you looked as if you were at home with that scattergun.
Yes, sir. I've deputied some, and I've been a shotgun guard on a stagecoach.
Well, it certainly came in helpful a few minutes ago.
Not really. The three of them standing were no match for the two of you, even if you were sitting down. I don't think they had any idea who they were dealing with. What I got was a cheap moment in the limelight.
You wouldn't think to look at him that he's a pianist, would you?
So, you're a piano player, are you?
No, sir, I'm a pianist.
What's the difference?
A piano player plays Buffalo Gals. A pianist plays Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1.
Suddenly, the three belligerent men burst through the batwing doors with their guns in their hands.
Smoke!
Smoke and Lewis came up from their chairs, bringing their pistols to bear. Smoke and Lewis, with smoking guns still in their hands, approached the three men, all three of whom were now prostrate on the floor. Smoke prodded one of the shooters with the toe of his boot, and he got no response. A few seconds later, Monte Carson came into the room.
What happened here?
Smoke and Lewis told the sheriff what had happened.
Anybody know these men?
Nobody knew them, so he went through their pockets. In every man's pocket, he found the same thing, a recruiting poster.
Men wanted to stem the rising tide of cattle rustling. Must be proficient with firearms. Apply at Long Trek Ranch, Big Rock, Colorado. Will be well paid. Cattle rustling? What cattle rustling would that be?
Loy Babcock was having his lunch after a long morning of backbreaking labor.
Wonder who that could be.
He saw Deacus Templeton standing there. Behind him were four men, all of whom were mounted. With the four mounted men was a steer with a rope around its neck.
Can I help you?
You mean instead of can you help yourself?
What do you mean, help myself? I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about the 15 head of steers that are mixed in with your cattle. You tried to change the brand, but you did a sloppy job.
You're crazy. I don't have any Long Trek stock.
Bring that steer up here, Nixon.
The man called Nixon dismounted, then led the steer up to the front of the house.
What do you call this? Look at this brand.
Templeton stepped down from the porch, pointing out the very clumsy attempt to change the LT brand into a Bar B. The LT was still clearly visible.
That's not my steer.
You're damn right it's not your steer. That's the whole point. So what was this steer doing on your ranch? This one and 14 others just like it.
I don't know how they got here. Maybe they wandered over here. Cattle do that, you know. They start following the grass or the water, and there's no telling where they're likely to turn up.
Uh-huh. And I suppose after they quit wandering around, they also branded themselves.
I'm telling you, I don't know how those steers got on my land. And I don't know how they got branded, but I didn't have anything to do with it.
You're lying. Well, I'm telling you right now, your cattle rustling days are over.
Nixon, who'd been coming closer, suddenly dropped rope over Babcock, then cinched it up tight.
Oh! What are you doing?
I'm gonna make certain you never steal anybody else's cattle.
Get him up in the hayloft.
What are you doing? Let my husband go!
You'd better stay out of this, missus.
Millie stepped back into the house, then came back out on the front porch holding a rifle.
You let my husband go!
Templeton already had his pistol out.
Get him up there. Get the job done.
Two of the four men climbed the ladder to the hayloft in the barn. Then they grabbed the rope and literally pulled Babcock up. When they got him into the loft, they took him over to the open door, tied one end of the rope around the protruding hay hoist, and looped the other end around his neck.
You got any last words, cattle thief?
I didn't steal your cows. You killed Millie, so I have nothing to live for. But I'll be damned if I let you kill me.
Babcock leaped out of the door himself, hit the end of the rope, then swung back and forth. Templeton and the others watched him until he quit swinging.
Get the rope off him.
You mean cut him down?
No, leave him up there. Just take off the rope we used to tie him up.
Templeton walked back over to the porch where the body of Millie Babcock lay. He picked up the rifle. He tossed the rifle onto the ground halfway between the house and the barn.
Let's go.
What about the steer we brought over?
Take him back to Long Trek. We don't need him anymore.
Big Rock Journal. Terrible tragedy. Loy Babcock and wife found dead. Yesterday, Charles Woodward, whose land adjoins the Babcock spread, grew concerned that it had been some time since he had seen his neighbor. Riding over to see if anything was wrong, he came upon a most grisly scene. Loy Babcock was found hanging from the hay hoist at his barn, and his wife, Millie, was dead of a gunshot wound on the back porch. Halfway between the porch and the barn was found Babcock's rifle, with one bullet having been fired. Tom Nunley, the county coroner, has ruled the deaths as a murder-suicide. Interment will be in the Garden of Memory Cemetery in Big Rock tomorrow at 2:00, post-meridian. There will be no church services.
One of Babcock's neighbors who went to the interment was Lucien Garneau. After the burial, he went to the land office to see Pete Perkins.
Well, you didn't waste any time getting here. Babcock's body isn't even cold in the ground yet.
I'm thinking of his next of kin. Surely he has someone who will inherit his land. I want to find out who that is and make them an offer on the place. I'm sure they will be aggrieved by his death, but perhaps some money would help ameliorate that grief.
Oh, well, I will see what I can do. Robert Dempster should be able to find out who the next of kin might be.
Robert Dempster was a morbidly obese man. As he sat behind his desk listening to Garneau, he was eating a sugar-coated cruller.
Now, there's no need to find out who the next of kin is. In 30 days, taxes will be due on every piece of property in the entire county. Babcock won't be here to pay the taxes, so title of the land will pass to whoever pays those taxes.
How much will that be?
That little bit of information comes under the heading, my legal fee.
All right. How much is your legal fee?
$100.
Come to the bank with me and I'll pay you.
Half an hour later, in exchange for the $100 he had received from Garneau, Dempster handed over a piece of paper.
You go to the county assessor and pay him the amount on this form, and he will hand over a deed of possession to you.
Garneau looked at the form.
What? This can't be right.
Oh, believe me, it's right. Do you see now how advantageous it is for you to have a good lawyer?
But this says $62.
Yes, that's right. For $62, you will own what was Babcock's ranch.
2 days later, Charles Woodward saw black smoke curling into the sky. Woodward reached the Babcock place in about 20 minutes. He saw a wagon loaded with furniture he recognized from his many visits with the Babcocks. He also saw that not only the house was burning, but so were the barn, the implement shed, and the little building where the hired hands stayed during the season. 4 men stood around watching the buildings burn.
I was going to say that you did a good job of getting the furniture out before it was burned along with the house, but it looks like you took it out before the house caught fire.
Of course we did. Just because we're burning all the buildings doesn't mean we have to burn the furniture, too.
Are you telling me that you burned the buildings?
We sure did.
Why would you do that?
Once Colonel Garneau bought the ranch, he was only interested in the land. The buildings were just in the way.
What do you mean Garneau bought the ranch? Bought it from who?
You'll have to ask the Colonel that. All I know is he owns the place now. And that means you're trespassing, by the way. What are you doing here anyway?
I came to see about the fire.
Well, you've seen about it. I suggest you get off the Colonel's property.